Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to our 2016 Iditarod coverage, Day 2, here on Mushing Radio. And on the line, calling in from Southern California, is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. I don't know if you have this feeling, but it seems this year like it seems like the Iditarod kind of snuck up on me. I knew it was coming, and then all of a sudden it's here and the teams are on the trail. And I was thinking to myself, like in that Talking Head song, well, how did I get here?
You know, just like I said before we went on air, it truly snuck up on me. I was down at the start today, and I thought I would come back and do a quick run with the dogs. And I was out on the trail at 6:45, just 15 minutes before airtime. And I pretty much dropped the dogs off to Vanessa and Lacey, who are helping us out here, and ran inside, turned everything on, and here we are. So, yeah, I got snuck up on just like everybody else, but I'm ready to rock. How about you?
Absolutely. So we had the just really briefly, someone had asked me on Facebook today when they started doing the restart as opposed to just having one start and that going into the entire race. And that started in 1995. And originally the restart was in Wasilla, and frequently they would move it up a little bit farther north to Houston or to Willow Lake. And then in 2008, it was shifted full-time to permanently to Willow. And originally, the ceremonial start in Anchorage would run out until Eagle River at the VFW Hall. And there was a tradition that after mushers came into the VFW Hall, there would be this big meal of moose chili that was prepared for them. But, you know, now they go to, on normal years, they go to the Campbell Airstrip in Anchorage, which is about 11 miles. This year, as we mentioned yesterday, because of the lack of snow, they only went about 3 miles, mostly on the city streets and then down towards that baseball stadium.
You know, up until 2002, I was reading on Bill Borden's Facebook page just a couple of years ago. He ran it in 2002. He ran out to Eagle River, and then, as you mentioned, they had their meal there, and then they started on Knick Lake later that afternoon. So it was a wham-bam type of deal. Very quick, very fast-paced. You know, you finish your ceremonial and all the pomp and circumstance, and then you run up to Knick Lake and do the restart. But you know what's interesting, Alex, at the VFW Hall there in Eagle River, they have a big sign there that says, checkpoint number one, Eagle River, and inside of the VFW Hall, they have all of the John Van Zyl posters from all of the different years for, I don't know, maybe 30 years back, and they all are covered in signatures from where they had stopped there for that checkpoint. A very cool piece of Iditarod history that I think very few people know about unless they've been in that hall.
You know, I have been outside that hall, but I've never actually gone inside because I didn't know that there was anything to see in there. So the next time I'm up there, I'm definitely gonna make sure to check that out.
So today I was out at the restart. I was helping out Hugh Neff out there, and we were out there. I got there at about 1 o'clock. He arrived at about 11, and there was 85 teams out there. Everybody was sitting back as they always do, but it was very warm. There was lots of people in lawn chairs. There was the requisite barbecue here and there. You know, some of the bigger teams like the DDs and the Martins, you know, that has a contingent of pack leaders back there that follow them. They always put on a little party. I'm sure you've seen that when you were here. But I was talking to Hugh and several of the folks around us. Jason Mackey was next to us. Lance was right down two trucks down, and Cindy Galea and Karen Hendrickson, and all of them said, wow, it is just so warm. I am so ready to get out on the trail. So that was kind of the consensus, at least in the general area where I was at. But, you know, from what I saw, and I watched 70-odd teams, 69-odd teams leave in front of us, all the teams looked great. Everybody looked like they were well under control and well relaxed. And as you know, Alex, the nerves really start jittering on Sunday morning, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And being in the sort of backstage area, in the staging area, is a very interesting thing because it's a combination of relaxation, double checking, and sheer nerves. And
right.
The people who have done it, people have done it a lot, tend to be much more organized. The people who are newer are constantly making sure that they have this thing that they wanted to bring or that they have this piece of equipment. So it can be both really exciting and really nerve-wracking. For a lot of the teams also, they're anxious to get out on the trail because there are, you know, several, I believe, like 1,300 or 1,400 dogs there in a very small area. And the dogs are, you know, the dogs are very social, but they're used to maybe being around 50 or 60 other dogs. They're not used to being around over 1,000 other dogs. So to get the dogs so that they can be in their own space and running and concentrating on just what's in front of them and not constantly distracted by other dogs is also something that's on a lot of people's minds.
And, you know, you had mentioned the folks that have done it a while are a little bit more relaxed. You can always see the less experienced or even the rookie mushers. They've got their gear and stuff just everywhere, all over, you know, around the truck in a huge pile. And, you know, it looks like they're just ready to pull their hair out because they're trying to get everything to fit in the sled. And, you know, it just looks like sort of controlled chaos that, you know, is the best way to describe it. This is like what it looks like to me, and I know from experience, when you go around those folks' trucks, it looks like a teenage boy's room.
Right, right. And you had mentioned that it was warmer today. I got a reading that it was 45 degrees at Willow Lake.
Wow.
Usually at the start of Iditarod, it will be somewhere between 5 and 20 degrees. So 45 is very warm for that. As I was watching the live stream of the team starting, there were quite a few mushers that I noticed who were not wearing gloves when they started out. And they all have their gloves, and they all, I'm sure, will put on their gloves. But it was amazing to me that it was actually warm enough that someone would start off down the trail without wearing gloves.
Right. It does get very cold pretty quickly as you hit the swamps, as you go over the lakes and then drop down onto the river. Even though it may be 40, 45 degrees there, at a little bit higher elevation, we're still pretty low, but we're sort of on a hill up here in Willow. And as you hit down onto that trail, I'm sure you've seen the pictures many times, Alex, and I'm sure folks that have watched The Insider have seen that Correll Hill. It's about 10 or 12 miles out. It's where you're coming from the swamp down onto the river. And not only is that a very precarious spot for a lot of folks, I've seen a lot of pictures of a lot of teams really crash up good right there, but the temperature changes quite a bit there. And at that point, the race is on because, you know, from that point forward, you're pretty much out there on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a couple of quick things for people who might not know about it. When teams come into Anchorage and they have their final vet check, they can bring up to 20 dogs to participate in the final vet check. For the ceremonial start in Anchorage, which was yesterday, they have up to 12 dogs, and usually everyone will have 12 dogs. And then for the real start in Willow, teams can have up to 16 dogs. And almost everyone every year will have 16 dogs. There's always a couple of teams that will have 14 or 15, but pretty much everyone will have 16. This year, Zoya Denur opted to start with 12 dogs rather than 16, which is an interesting way to start off. You always want to have enough dogs so that if something happens, you can drop dogs, and you still will have enough dog power to go forward. But this year, with the light snow, especially in the first 300 miles or so, that might be a really great move to start off with fewer dogs, so that they won't be going as fast. We saw in 2014 a lot of teams were just unable to slow the dogs down in some of these very bare areas in the early part of the race, and that led to a lot of injuries and a lot of people having to scratch. So starting with 12 dogs, although it seems like that's a risky move, might be a very smart thing for her to have done.
You know, unfortunately, I guess, is you cannot obviously add dogs on the trail. So she's sort of, playing it off the hip a little bit. You have to, I believe, start with 12, but you have to end with 5 in harness. That does not count
right.
Any dog that may be hitching a ride in the bag. You have to cross the finish line with 5 dogs in harness. So just in Zoya's case, she can only drop 7 dogs along the trail and still finish with the requisite 5. Boy, that's going to be tough to do, because typically people are dropping dogs, and many, many people finish with 8 or less dogs as they're coming into Nome, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's very rare, and people might not be aware of this, it's very rare for a team to finish with all 16 dogs.
Right. I know Waddy McDonald did it a couple of years ago, and I believe Jake Berkowitz. Those two really stand out, but I think that's the last two in a while that have finished with full teams.
Yeah, those are the only two that I can remember. There may be one or two others each year, but it is a very rare thing to finish with all of your dogs.
So what else did you see on the live feed? Obviously, I was kind of in the trenches. You know, I was really looking out for helmets. You know, that was a big deal a couple of years ago when the conditions were like this. I know a couple of folks even went so far as to wear hockey pads. I did see Brent have his helmet on, but I didn't get a chance to see if anybody else did. Did you?
I saw Ellen Halverson was wearing a helmet, but that was the only other one that I noticed.
Interesting.
So, you know, at least a couple of people. I think Scott Jansen had some serious padding, but I don't believe he was wearing a helmet.
So what else did you see?
I also noticed that
2.5 hour plus adventure there, as all the teams, that had to have been a long time in front of the computer.
Yes, it kind of was. And you know, it's fascinating because you get to see the teams coming up. You get to see the first 10 or 15 seconds of them down the trail, and then the next team comes up. One thing that I did see that struck me is Ryan Reddington actually jumped out of the chute just before he started and got on the PA to specifically thank the volunteers, which was kind of a wonderful thing to do, and I think very unexpected for a lot of people, because he did it right before they were counting down his 10 seconds till he left. So I don't know if that was something he planned or if it was just something spontaneous, but it was a very, very wonderful touch. It did look to me, and I'd love to get your take on this, it looked to me like there weren't as many people in Willow for the start as there usually are.
It looked like quite a few. I know when we were heading into Willow early in the afternoon, traffic was backed up, all, you know, flowing nicely, but backed up as far as we could see on the parks. But it looked like, you know, the regular number of folks from what I saw. So I think it had a great turnout. But like I said, I was sort of in the trenches. There was lots of fans milling about for pictures and, of course, lots of media. So I think it was pretty well covered.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to mention is I saw a whole bunch of pictures of Lance Mackey. And a friend of mine said, Lance just looks like 1,000 miles of bad road. And Lance definitely looks like he has lost some weight in the past couple of years. But you look at Lance Mackey, and this is a guy who has been through so much, and he just has this look that he is the toughest guy in the room.
Right.
And I am, you know, it's always fun to see Lance race. It is likely that he will not be very competitive this year. People, longtime listeners might remember that last year he had a lot of problems and had problems with his hands and couldn't booty his dogs. And his brother Jason had basically stopped going ahead and ran with Lance for several hundred miles to make sure that Lance was okay and to help him out a little bit. As payback sort of for that, Lance had talked last year about retiring, but then decided that he would run again. But he let Jason take 9 of his dogs for Jason's team this year. So 9 of presumably the top Lance Mackey dogs are running on Jason's team. So that presumably would give Jason a little bit of a boost. But on the other hand, that's going to make Lance's chances that much less. You know, that said, I would never write off Lance Mackey, but it seems like this is very much going to be a rebuilding year for him.
Let's talk about that just for a second, Alex. I want to make sure we have time to talk about our musher profile. But Jason was right next to Hugh's truck. He looked very good. It looks like he's got a bunch of new sponsors. Everything looked fresh. He had a brand new truck. He had lots of people in, matching jackets and all that. So he looked like he was ready to rock and roll. He looked very on top of his game. Right next to him was his brother Lance. He came over and talked to us for quite a while, probably 10 or 15 minutes. And, yeah, you're right. He does look like, he's been down the trail many times. He looks very grizzled, very, very hardened, I guess you would say. He looks like he's been doing this for a really long time. And he was showing us his battery-powered gloves that he has. He has a battery-powered jacket that uses these batteries that heat up, the gloves and the jacket. He also has a pair of socks that he uses that use this battery power system to heat up. And he was showing these off and how he said that these were a direct result from last year. But I also got a chance to talk to Jason and Lance's mom, Kathy Smith. And longtime mushers will know the name Kathy Smith. And we spoke for a long time. And, of course, she's very excited for both of her boys. She thinks that Lance is ready to rock and roll. And she thinks that Jason is as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting race for both the Mackey brothers. And I think they'll do okay. I don't know about how Lance will finish, but I do think that he'll do very well, as he always does. I know that there was a quick article in the ADN where he said that he has an awesome team ready to go, mostly 3-year-olds. So it'll be interesting to see how Lance does out on the trail. So we'll see how it goes. But I know that that there are 85 other teams out there, and I want to make sure that we can at least cover some of them. And you want to talk tonight about a local musher. She lives just the neighborhood above us, Lisbeth Norris. Her dad and mom, JP and Kari, run the local feed store here. That's where everybody gets all of their dog food, all of the mushers in the area, many of them coming up from as far as Homer to get dog food from Underdog Feeds. So the Norris family has been around here for a long time. And I don't know if you're going to mention, but they're, I believe, the oldest Siberian Husky mushing kennel in the United States. So take it away, Alex.
They are. Lisbeth is only 28, I believe. She was born in Willow, went to college in Fairbanks. She had volunteered in the Iditarod and was hanging around and helping out in the dog yard in Unalakleet. She was paying a lot of attention to the dogs rather than the mushers at the time. She intended to become a vet, and that changed a little bit after she got out of college. She went to Norway. She studied a little bit in Norway and worked as an adventure expedition guide. But as you mentioned, her family is very, very involved with mushing and with Siberians. Her grandfather, Earl, and her grandmother, Natalie, met because Natalie was on the – they both had collected dogs, Siberians, and they both were interested in dog racing. And Natalie was on the cover of a magazine with three huskies. And in the article in the magazine, she said that she wanted to move to Alaska. And Earl had just started living in Alaska, and he saw this, and he wrote to her, and he said, when you come to Alaska, I will help you with whatever you need. So she came to Alaska. They started dating and eventually got married. They homesteaded in Anchorage and started a kennel there with Siberians. And this was in the 1940s. And then the city got more and more crowded and more people moved in. And they decided that was too much for them and there wasn't enough space for their dogs. So they moved up to Willow. And Earl helped start the Fur Rondi World Championship sprint races and won them several times. And he was one of these mushers who, and there's a very long and great tradition of this. He was one of these mushers who was very interested in passing along knowledge and helping to mentor and train other mushers. And one of the mushers that he helped mentor was Martin Boozer, who, as most Iditarod fans know, is also someone who takes very seriously the idea of encouraging new mushers and making his time and his knowledge and expertise available to anyone who wants to learn about it. So Earl and Natalie's son, JP, grew up around dogs and mushing, and he ran sprint races on and off. Her mother is Carrie Skogen, who is Norwegian and had started getting into dog mushing in Norway and then came to Alaska to be a handler and stayed and eventually started making her own kennel, ran the Iditarod in 1984 and 1986. So Lisbet had gone to Norway after graduating, then came back to Alaska because she wanted to get serious about running dogs and helping her parents with this kennel. She runs a team of Siberian Huskies. There are a couple of teams this year that are all Siberians. And Siberians have this reputation as being a little bit slow and not really competitive. And one of the things that she has said that her goal is in as a musher is to keep working with the breed and get the breed much more respected and competitive. She's run the race twice, finished 48th in 2014, 49th in 2015. But I've seen a bunch of interviews with her, and she's always asked about Siberians being slow, and she gets a little bit defensive about it because a lot of the Siberians, especially the Siberians on her team, some of them are very, very fast dogs. And she has said publicly that she does believe that a team of all Siberians can win the Iditarod, that they're not quite there yet, but it's very possible that we will see a team of Siberians win the Iditarod at some point in the next, 10 years or so.
So this is her third Iditarod, as you had mentioned, and,
yes.
And she was at the back of the pack the first year running with her good friend Monica Zappa. And I know that they were trading off the Red Lantern spot for quite a while. And it ended up being, I can't think of the name right off. It was three ladies that were kind of mushing together the last third of the race or so, Lisbeth, Monica, and another one. And the name escapes me real quick. But then she did relatively well last year. She came up several spots. You said 48th, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So she was doing quite well compared to the year before. So it is very typical that mushers will come up in rankings as they become more experienced on the trails, as the dogs become more experienced on the trails, and I think that she will do very good this year. I think that she may be a solid middle-of-the-pack runner. I see Lisbeth on the trails all the time. She's one of the few people that run on the same trails as Arkenel, as well as Vern Halter. That name is a big name in Iditarod and Yukon Quest circles, and I think that she'll do well. I hope that that little Siberian team can do what they have to do. So, Alex, we have about 4 minutes left. Anything else today? If not, who is our musher for tomorrow evening?
A couple more quick things just right now. We have almost 20 teams into Yetna Station right now, 18 of them out of Yetna Station. Scott Jansen, who was the first musher out, is still in the lead right now. As you mentioned, it's a very, very big group of mushers, and since they were leaving every 2 minutes, and you have 85 of them, there's a considerable distance between the first team that left and the last team that left. That will be all sorted out later when they take their 24s, but for right now, it's hard to make a lot of where exactly people are now, 5 hours for someone like Scott Jansen, and for Martin Koenig, closer to 2.5 hours into the race.
Right. So the front runners there, the first portion of the pack, they were almost to Yetna as the last few mushers were pulling the hook there in Willow. So it is a considerable distance there for the teams spread out there on the river. So every one of the teams right now is on either the Big Sioux. I assume most of them are off the Big Sioux River and heading, I guess it would be south on the Yetna River before they kind of dogleg over towards Skwentna and then on up into the mountains. So tonight, as we had mentioned in previous years, not a whole lot happens at the first couple of checkpoints. You may see some of the back of the packers begin to start taking some extended breaks, typically at Skwentna. Yetna has become pretty much just a pass-through checkpoint. I know it is famous for their food there. They have excellent burgers, and they make chili for the mushers, and it's a great spot for folks that fly in or snow machine out to catch glimpses of all the teams. But very few teams these days stop for any amount of time there at Yetna or even Skwentna. And then the next checkpoint, which a lot of them will be at before we go on air tomorrow, will be the is it the Finger Lake one or is it Rainy Pass?
Finger Lake.
So
yeah,
that,
Finger Lake, and
that
then Rainy
there
Pass.
Is in, go ahead, Alex. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. Just saying Finger Lake, then Rainy Pass, and then Roan.
Okay. And so right in that section there in that Alaska range, and that's where things get real dicey with the steps and the gorge and all of that. So it'll be interesting to see how things start to play out tomorrow night. Typically after we're off the air, most of these folks will be hitting the interesting parts of the trail. And very quickly before we close, most people like to take those steps at night just so they can just get it over with and get through it and then work their way on into that first third of the race. Alex, very quickly, who do we want to talk about tomorrow?
Tomorrow I want to talk about Jan Steves a little bit.
Okay. We've definitely covered Jan on several shows. I know she was a highlight of at least one or two shows a couple of years ago. She is a very interesting musher, very interesting story, and I think that story is going to add a little bit more to it if they haven't heard the story already with the fires and what happened up here in Willow last summer. Anything else, Alex?
Just very briefly, it seems I don't want to put a narrative to this race while it's just barely started, but it seems like there's been a lot of people have suffered losses, and there seems to be a lot of teams that are in this race this year that are really looking for victories and redemption of one kind or another, and I think that's going to play in and make this a very, very exciting race.
Very good. So you can follow Alex over on Twitter. He's at Coldfoot Films. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dog Works Radio. You can listen to all of our episodes, including all of our past episodes, over on mushingradio.com. We're hosted over on KVRF 89.5 FM every night here in the Valley during our Iditarod coverage. So if you're in the Palmer-Wasilla area, you can listen to us right on the radio in your car if you like. Or you can always find us over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio. Alex, we'll talk to you next time. Have a good night. Thank you. On behalf of my co-host today, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.